Pawtucket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between.
This station is testing its emergency alert system
Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Good morning. Welcome to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thank you very much for listening on this Wednesday. It is Wednesday, so keeping with the tradition we've had the last few weeks, we are in Montgomery in the State House today. Pray for our internet connection because it is sometimes unstable, and we'll try to make the best we can of that. That being said, thanks for joining us. We got a packed show today. State Representative Ed Oliver about to join us here in a moment, but beyond that, Congressman Jerry Carl will join. He'll join us by phone. We'll talk about the campaign. We had Barry Moore on yesterday. So keeping true to the pledge, we have those guys on once a week until that March 5th primary, and we'll see how that shakes out. State Representative Steve Klaus, I've not talked to him in a while, not since he's been General Fund Chairman in the House, but he hails from Ozark. Always been good to this program. Look forward to hearing from him. Brian Brenyard, new member from Tuscaloosa County. He took over the Kyle South seat, who was from Fayette County. We'll see how he is. Coming into his new role here, and we'll talk to him about some other things as well. State Representative Danny Garrett tentatively set to join us, chairman of the ETF. Now, he may have a meeting, and if it runs long, we have someone in the bullpen ready to go to be named here if necessary. So, but he'll be at 11 o'clock hour. We'll wrap it all up with your Lieutenant Governor, Will Ainsworth. So you want to make sure you stay tuned for all 3 hours if you want to know what's going on in Alabama legislative politics. In the meantime, text line 251-343-0106. Text me, comment, complaint, suggestion, compliment, whatever it is that's on your mind. Joining us now, as I have mentioned, this is the last segment from one of my favorite parts of the state. We always spend time in his district when we're wife, the child, and the dogs, and I head to Auburn for a sporting event. But Ed Oliver from Dadeville with us. Representative, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Good to be here.
Hey, thanks for coming by. So been tied up with the gambling bill, and we've thoroughly have addressed that saga, but the show still goes on, and you and I talk, you know, frequently about critical race theory, what's going on in the academy, higher ed, et cetera. What's kind of a progress report there? Where are we at on that?
Well, we're at Will Barfoot is going to introduce the bill in the Senate, or has introduced it. It's in committee today at 11 o'clock, and we've got folks up there to talk for and against it, and I expect it to pass. And as soon as the Senate passes this bill on the floor, we'll get it in the House.
Long overdue, right?
But I'll say this, a three-year development on a bill, I think it makes a good bill. It's had a lot of eyes on it and a lot of smart people working on it.
Well, and you know, the Senate's been the trick, right? That's where it's gone to sort of fizzle
out. Right,
yeah.
Right.
But you're letting them take up the lead on this.
Well, sometimes you just have to hand them the football and say, all right, it's up to you.
You feel pretty good about it, so, you know.
I do.
Senator Barfoot, I heard there was a little bit of back and forth with Roger Smitherman, Senator Smitherman, and Will Barfoot over it. But
I think sitting and talking with them, they understand the purpose of the bill, and I think they agree with it. But once again, they're from the opposition party, so that's what they do is they oppose things.
Yeah, well, the loyal opposition is not necessarily a bad place to be for those guys, but they make the most of it. What Well, walk us through and tell us, like, exactly what this bill does.
Well, here's the 30-second rundown.
All right, lay it on me.
The bill prohibits certain public entities, including state agencies, local boards of education, and public institutions of higher education, from maintaining a diversity, equity, and inclusion office or department, or sponsoring any diversity, equity, and inclusion programs or programs that advocate for divisive concepts. It prohibits the same public entities from promoting, endorsing, or requiring a firm affirmation of certain concepts relating to race, sex, or religion. And it prohibits these same public entities from conditioning enrollment or attendance in certain classes or trainings on the basis of race or color. And it also authorizes public entities to discipline or terminate employees or contractors who violate this act. And this applies from K-12 through post-secondary education. And I think it's long overdue.
Well, was this a... What is the landscape like? How big of a problem do you think this is or was?
I think post George Floyd and this COVID, the psyche of the left is on steroids. So we've had a lot of activist teachers that are out proselytizing for what they believe, and I get that. But the classroom's not the place, and this protects all kids, left or right, doesn't matter. It puts teachers back in the business of teaching, not trying to politicize kids.
I mean, it still goes on, and it's still, but what was going, the trend was, instead of it being just sort of a thing that goes on in the classroom, it may or may not be going on in the classroom, they started making it, like, putting these programs in writing.
It's pervasive. And, yeah. It's in all the books. And the thing is 99.9% of teachers in this state are great. But it doesn't take many to be the disruptors. And frankly, if your kid goes through K-12, that's compulsory education. We make you go.
Right.
So the legislature has a responsibility to be involved and to at least find the guardrails to make sure your kid is safe and gets the kind of education that is practical and is not some wackadoodle CRT theory that has no basis on the rest of their life. It doesn't help them work, doesn't help them get a job, doesn't help them to become productive citizens.
No, it's like a virtue signaling exercise that with all the problems of education, now higher education is different in Alabama, but K through 12, right? This probably ought to be near the bottom of the priority list.
Well, and I'll be honest, we had looked at just because of the First Amendment constrictions on what we can and can't do with the post-secondary, we had thought real hard about making this a K-12 bill and following up with the DEI bill. But then being an Alabama graduate and being naturally lazy, we decided to combine the bills and just pass one. So we did put DEI into this bill. So diversity, equity, inclusion at the post-secondary level is included, and largely because Florida and Texas had success with it.
Well, tell me this, Representative. Now, when we were debating about the merits of this a few years back or whatever, 2 years or a year ago, with regards to the University of Alabama and Auburn University and them like sort of being a constitutional flagship university, does this law apply to them like it does
Absolutely.
Troy, South Alabama?
Absolutely.
Because they would argue it wouldn't, that they have a different set of rules.
Well, there are about 630 million ways we can influence that. So that's the universities are great. I went to the University of Alabama, love the institution. I live 20 minutes from the stadium at Auburn.
Right.
Great institutions. I think this in the long run will be good for them. And we're a conservative state.
Well, do you foresee any problems like that? I mean, now this is just because these discussions have just kind of been theoretical, but. Have they given you any feedback?
They have, and we've reached out to them as well. And everything in this world is a compromise. I think as the pendulum swings and the state chases its conservative orbit, right. All this stuff will disappear anyway. And I think, or at least be channeled to a back row.
It does feel like kind of in a fad. Or something like a trend that will fizzle out at some point.
Well, people come to their senses.
Yeah, I mean, just the whole woke culture. I've always said, well, like, just give it time. Now that doesn't make it right or wrong. Well, mm-hmm. It makes it wrong, I mean, from our perspective, but it does feel like it's temporary.
Well, you mentioned virtue signaling. There are a lot of people that are impressionable, and they hear these things.
Right.
Remember, CRT, Marxism, been around this country since the 20s, and it never completely goes away. And every now and then finds a toehold and reemerges, and that's exactly what Divisive Concepts fights against.
Yeah, well, have you made any tweaks to it since it got out of house, will this, the Barfoot bill, is it pretty satisfactory in your view?
I love the bill. Eagle Forum has helped us with it from the start. I think they're very happy with it. Manhattan Institute, which is a think tank we've used to help us with it, they like it. Have had no pushback. And, of course, the language has evolved over the last 3 or 4 years. Now, CRT is always changing. The left just, they do the same thing and call it something different. So you have to be tuned into that.
Well, and for the sake of this discussion, like an example of CRT, like the 1619 Project, and that was the real founding of America, and then America was built on slave labor or whatever, and that's just like a revisionist sort of history. It's not 1776.
Not sort of. That is completely revisionist.
Right. So that's the kind of thing you're guarding against, right?
Sure. And history is that's the thing we get from Democrats that oppose the bill, is that they can't teach history. Well, that's not it at all. And Senator Barfoot and I have been very careful to say that any sort of history that you can find 3 or 4 mainstream scholars that would agree is history is history. If, and I hate to use the term wackadoodle twice in the same conversation, but we all know there are folks out there that are going to bring up 1619 or things like that that are revisionist history and think that should be included. Well, this law precludes that.
Now, it goes beyond just schools, but also state agencies.
So, state agencies and their political subdivisions, to include counties and municipalities and anything else.
We have a lot of that going on. I mean, there's human resources, and you guys know, like team building and these seminars.
Compelled speech is the thing that this bill blows up. And they can't ask you for a DEI statement. They can't make you say you believe in this or that to hire you for a job. If you're a stonemason, you're a stonemason. You're not a political scientist. So that we get away from all these, I can't even think of a nice way to put it, so I won't.
Now it doesn't get contractors. You're a private contractor. You work for the government.
It can get contractors as well.
As long as it's involved with the government.
Well, right.
Explain me. Walk me through that. Like, if I'm like one of these woke corporations or trying to appear to be, and I show up and I win a contract with the state, where does the law kick in?
The place that I think it's the most lenient, I'll start with that. If you have a student, say he's doing an internship for a company that he gets credit for, we're not going to get involved in that. And you might consider that a contract of some sort. That's going to be outside our purview for the most part. Contractors that work for a university or the state or a municipality, no DEI statements.
So you go back when the state was trying to borrow money from prisons, and this gets back to the whole ESG discussion, a lot of that.
Which is was birthed out of all this other crazy stuff.
Right.
And for ESG, of course, that's where corporations want to do the right and wondrous, virtuous thing. So if you don't participate in their program with environmental social governance, then they don't loan you money.
Right.
I'm one of those folks. I believe the state of Alabama ought to just suck it up and not do business with those people.
And these are some heavy hitters, especially in Alabama business. And
sure.
There's a real reluctance to do that. But
we are open for business in Alabama, but we're business.
And we'll wrap it up on this, but talk me through this. Like, if you are found to be engaging in this behavior, I mean, what's the penalty? What was sort of the teeth of the enforcement mechanism of this?
Well, termination.
But would the legislature say you must terminate this employee? I mean, like, how?
Well, we can withhold money. So people worry about enforcement. We're not going to put people in jail.
Right.
But we appropriate money to all of these folks.
But you could do that without this law, right?
You could. But we're giving people a chance to comply.
And just laying down the marker
sure.
and the rules, right?
Sure.
Well, best of luck to you. We'll get more into it, I guess, as the days come, and we'll see how this goes. But it looks pretty good right now, right?
I think it's a good bill for Alabama. I'm very proud of it.
State Representative Ed Oliver, ladies and gentlemen, we got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk on 106.5.
up late again, watching TV with my best friend, laughing at the late night show. I don't know what's wrong with me, 'cause I know I need my rest, but if I don't stay up all night, sleep all day, I ain't at my best.
Hey, yes, welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Wednesday morning, 251-343-0106. You need to be in touch with the program. All you got to do is text me, and I will do my best to respond, time permitting. As I said, we got a pretty packed show. Jerry Carl from the 1st Congressional District. You just heard from him there in just a moment ago. We'll hear from him here shortly. Let's get some of these texts out of the way. I do appreciate the feedback. Let's see here. Josh hoped the bill passes to get outstanding rewriting of history. Let's see. And bringing up, a little slow on the internet here, and bringing up the past every few minutes to try to make a group feel bad, it's just a it's just as bad as a spiteful spouse. I like it, the concept. I don't know how you enforce it. Now, that doesn't mean they shouldn't do it, but that just will clean it all up. It's important to have kind of realistic expectations from this. Terry, in all the critical race theory and finger pointing about slavery, why don't we call out the people who actually put the blight of slavery into the current United States? And that was the owners of the Virginia Company and the Bank of London, English monarchy, and associated aristocracy. If anyone owes reparations, they do. Let's see, Gene, I can't wait to read this. Maybe we need Eagle Forum to write a bill so that the legislature could pass something that would actually improve the grades in K-12 instead of a bill to prevent a fantasy. This will be bad for business. Well, thank you for that, Gene. I don't think you just pass a law to improve grades K-12. But look, Gene, we have a system of the consent of the governed, we the people, and parents don't want their kids being taught this stuff. Or it doesn't even matter, parents, taxpayers, and don't want their resources applied toward a political agenda that demonizes them. I mean, this is really important stuff here to understand. That you need to understand where folks are coming from on this. I think this is very important. That it's not just like, okay, we've got to do this. We've got to do this this way. We've got to, because of our political agenda or whatever. There are people who look and say, my tax dollars are paying for what? My tax dollars are teaching what? What is going on here? And that's just not something. So that's, I mean, you're in the minority here, Gene. Now, I tend to side with, academic freedom and whatnot, but we put such an emphasis on these things. We put such a focus on it. Is this where the focus ought to be? I mean, and I use this word a lot, but institutionalized it. You know, if you have a left-wing liberal professor and it's just kind of kooky, and then they teach a Joyce Vance or somebody at Alabama's law school, you just tolerate it. You try to learn, take away from that setting what you can. You try to work through it, and but when you start mandating it, when the village elders start saying you have to do this, you have to teach this. That's what they're trying to guard against. They're trying to guard against the academy and changing a whole culture, changing a whole sensibility, all the sensibilities of people. And I think you know, don't like it. You don't like what they're doing. Vote them out of office. That's what I would say, Gene. Let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5. Radio land, find the love just as true as mine. Good night, angel. Sleep tight, darling. And close your pretty brown eyes. Look away. Look away, Dixieland. Glory, glory, hallelujah. Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking with us. On this Wednesday morning, we're broadcasting live in Montgomery from the fourth floor cloakroom, to be precise, of the Alabama State House. Still to come, Steve Klaus. He is a lawmaker from Ozark, former General Fund Chairman Brian Brenyard from Tuscaloosa, the new member of the State House, taking the old Kyle South seat. Danny Garrett, tentative, he'll be here, but the chairman of the Education Trust Fund. And then we'll wrap it up with our Lieutenant Governor, Will Ainsworth. So we are jam-packed today, so please make sure you stay tuned. But joining us now, always a pleasure to bring on my next guest. Keep it true to our pledge that we will have these guys on at least once a week from here until the March 5th Republican primary. But Jerry Carl, our incumbent First District Congressman, joining us. Congressman, how are you?
I'm great, Jeff. I'm losing my voice, so if I sound a little peculiar, please don't work with me here. We've got about, 9 days left in the campaign, and I've got about 40 speeches to give, so I'm going to run it until it runs out of gas, and then I'll have to sit on the sideline, I guess. But things are looking very positive for us. I'm excited. You know, our message of talk the talk and not, you know, and walk the walk, I think that's beginning to take root. I think people are beginning to view me as the guy that gets things done versus my opponent. And, you know, that's the type of people we need. We got enough talkers in D.C. Lord knows we do there. You know, securing the border. Let's go back to the Trump plan. Build a wall. Remain in Mexico. And deport the illegal immigrants that are here. We gotta work on cutting the spending. I'm on fancy word for budget committee. I'm on appropriations, and we cut some of those programs. There's 12 of them. We cut some of them by as much as 30%. I'm very proud. I didn't look at what I could spend money on. I looked at what we could cut money from. Then last but not least, you know, we need to, we gotta push back on Biden. His environmental issues, I call them environmental thugs. And, they're a bunch of terrorists up there. And we see it in Alabama. We see it in our district. Yeah, we got to have people that will not just talk the talk, but walk the walk and push back on those people. You know, we'll all drive electric cars, but, you know, they have no plan on how to get us in those electric cars. So I think our message is beginning to work.
Well, tell me this, and tactically, you're really charging hard, hitting Congressman Moore on a number of things. But talk about that approach, and I guess is it to draw a distinction between the two of you?
You need to know who you're voting for, Jeff. I mean, just because, you know, a candidate's good looking and speaks well, is that the reason you vote for it? No, you need to know what his background is. His background, his roots will tell you where his heart's at, where he's at. I'm a giver. I've always been a giver. My mother's taught me that. So I do a lot of things that probably over and above in a lot of cases. But, you know, you got a candidate that's got 7 tax liens that he's had to clean up. You got a candidate that all he wants to do is talk about Trump. I mean, he rides Trump like a Shetland pony. But the truth is, he forgot to vote for him in 2016. So if you're that high on a guy and you forget to vote for him, I question that. And then the big thing today is the money that he's taking from Club for Growth. That doesn't mean a lot to the average voter, because Club for Growth is just a fancy name. But it's a D.C.-based group that they're very hard on the farm bill. They don't like the farm bill, and they don't like also shipyard. So the folks that are listening on this radio better take that in mind. They are the never Trumpers. They are the never Trumpers. So to take, I don't remember the numbers, Jeff, you can clean me up on that. But it's less than 600,000 for campaign here this last week and a half. I think says a lot about the man that's running. Because he said in an interview, was it with you? That he would not take money from Club for Growth.
Well,
yeah, he's doing it.
And I mean, these are fair criticisms, but Club for Growth is going to do whatever it wants. It's going to come into this race, and if it wants to run ads, we've litigated Citizens United.
You can push back on them and talk them down. You can tell them you don't want their money. You don't want to be associated with Never Trumpers. You don't want to be associated with a group that's anti-farmers. You don't want to be associated with a group that's anti-defense. You can walk away from it. You can tell them to keep their money. Now, after doing that, I agree with you. But right now, there's been no pushback. You know, he's broke, I assume. It's probably the only reason he's taking that. I haven't seen any numbers on him lately, to be fair. But I'll see him today. We'll debate a couple times today, and we'll go right on through. And we'll be in D.C. next week. We got a possible shutdown coming up. So that's going to make it interesting on election day.
Well, and we'll get to hear just one more question on Club for Growth. I mean, Coach Tuberville had Club back at him. I mean, and I know they came out against Trump. I mean, do you know, they support a lot of candidates. Does it necessarily make them all bad?
Yes, but Barry made the point early on to tell everybody he was not going to take Club for Growth's money because of their views of Donald Trump. And now he's taking it. Now he's going, oh, well, I can't control them. Yes, you can. You can call them out. You can tell them you don't want it. You can tell them you don't need it. You can tell them, you know, I don't want to be associated with a group like that. I totally disagree with you. You can't walk away
from it. Oh, no. I get it. I mean, you need, if this is something he needs to own and answer to, then so be it. There are other candidates who do the same thing. But that's, I guess you made your point clear on that. Congressman.
They were a big supporter of Bill Hightower's in my first race.
Right.
And of course, me beating them, I just made them mad. So, you know, it is what it is. We'll win. It just doesn't make it as easy.
And they've always been really, really, like, I never have understood why they were so aggressive with Bradley Byrne, even though he scored high on their their scorecard. They're an enigma to me. But they've been kind of made to be a boogeyman in some regards, but I don't really know. They play hard in Alabama politics, but it's...
They love Alabama politics. They're going to get involved in... So I'm told they're going to start getting involved in state politics, too. So just kind of keep your eyes open.
Well, and then we will. And they have already a little bit. So, but that's a... As you well know, that's a completely different animal. We're joined by... go ahead.
No, I was going to say, but keep in mind they're a Washington-based group. They don't care about anything but D.C. and the values there. You talk about the swamp, they are the swamp.
Well, in what way?
Well, I mean, they're trying to, they're like military, off school. I mean, they want those programs shut down because my guess is they probably have got stock in other groups. These are very wealthy billionaires that are playing in politics is what it amounts to. So if they can take a group like Alabama, a state like Alabama, and affect it, they'll do it.
Well, but is it entirely possible they're just philosophically opposed to big defense contractors and the way? I mean, and I'm not saying that's what Austell is, but do you not give them the benefit of the doubt that they are just philosophically smaller government?
How about our farm bill? How about our farmers? I met with a group last night. It was about 40 of them, and they're all on the brink of going out of business. When you have to pay $1.2 million for a cotton picker, and I'm over here in Dothan, and you got to pay $1.2 million for that, you got to pick a lot of cotton. And if we don't help our farmers and keep them in business so the next generation can take over those farms, we're going to starve to death. We have to take care of the people. We have to. Also, it's about 4,000 jobs, give or take any day. Those are 4,000 jobs in the Alabama community, Mobile community. I'm not going to apologize for standing up for them. You look at Novacell down here. Novacell and old Fort Rucker, we've got to spend some money in that place. It is wore out. And Congressman Moore has done nothing to help these people, nothing. So we've got a heavy, heavy burden that's going to be laid on us after March the 5th to start getting this stuff moving. But I have a plan. I've already started working a plan. Again, I don't talk the talk. I'm a worker. I dig ditches. So we've already started on some stuff for Novacell, working with Mike Rogers, working with Katie Britt, working with the aviation groups. I mean, we've already started. It's not even our district.
Well, Congressman, I want to move on to, while we still got you here. I want to talk about the shutdown or pending shutdown, it appears. But is that where we're heading with this next pending impasse?
Well, I honestly think we're going to see a shutdown this time. You're not going to see me vote. I take that back. I'm not going to tell how I'm going to vote. I've learned. Don't tell people how you're going to vote until you see everything. But it's going to be a hard sell because we keep putting it off and putting it off and putting it off, kicking this can down the road. And we've got to focus on, the business of the people and kicking it down the road. I mean, since the last CR we voted on, we really haven't talked much as a group about it. And then wait till the last week and start the chatter. But, we should have already sat down. We should have already got these things moving. Maybe not fixed, but at least moving. So it's frustrating to us. And if it takes a shutdown, we'll shut it down.
Well, and that's where this is. I mean, can Republicans weather that storm? And you've seen how the media can react and Democrats, and they'll have a lot of allies in their corner on this. I mean, how do you feel about that?
Yeah. So, Jeff, I've been against a shutdown from day one. I don't think it really benefits, but we can't get anybody's attention in Washington. I mean, everyone's kind of just running their own race, leadership the same way. We've got to do something different. And again, until I see it, I'm not going to say I'm going to vote for it or against it, but a CR is probably in the horizon. I think it's next Thursday. We'll vote on it, or Friday, one of the two. So I think it's coming, whether it be for a few days or a week. I have no idea, but we got to get leadership talking about it.
Next question I have, Congressman, here we are. Looks like you did. It doesn't look like it, but it's real. The Mayorkas impeachment, and do you feel like that is maybe fulfilling kind of the mandate or the pledges that were made during that 2022 cycle?
I think that was a fair vote that I made. I'll talk about mine. I have been to a couple of events with a man. He is not honest. He's not honest with his country. When he talks about they've got it under control at the border, that's a blatant lie. Or he's very stupid. One of the two. And I don't think he's stupid. I think politically he's making a statement there to cover his boss, which is Joe Biden. Our vote was symbolic. We're not going to get him out of office. He'll be there. The only way we're going to fix him is get rid of Joe Biden. The only way we're going to fix the border is get rid of Joe Biden. The only way we're going to fix our environmental issues is get rid of Joe Biden. So when Donald Trump gets in there, I mean, it's going to be kicked in high gear. Folks, think about who's going to represent the Gulf Coast. Think who's going to be representing the Wiregrass. You've got to have somebody that can work the floor. You've got to have somebody that doesn't mind stepping on toes. And somebody that just doesn't talk all the time. I mean, they talk and they talk and they start shouting over one another. I'm a worker bee. I go and find people and resolve these issues. So we got to have people that can do that with Trump. Trump's not going to pull this wagon by himself. He's got to have people that will actually take the lead on some things and run it for him. run traps for him. So, you know, let's think about that in this election. That's a very important fact that people aren't giving much consideration to.
Last question, we'll wrap it up on this. And I asked your opponent this yesterday, how do you feel about, I mean, we spend a lot of time talking about the presidential election. How do you feel about Congress? I mean, particularly the House, the holding on a majority, is that something, what's the word around the room there?
No one's really talking about that. I mean, I read an article every now and then and they talk about it, and they feel like Republicans are going to keep control. There's so many races that are up in the air. I mean, I've literally been focused on my race, and that's all I'm focusing on right now. After March the 5th, I'll focus on the other races. So to answer your question, I can't give you a straight answer at this point. The Senate, I mean, everything leans towards the Senate taking control, which is exciting. As long as we can keep the Senate in control, we can kill a lot of bad legislation that comes out of the House. Or that got approved in 2020 when we went in as a minority. But Jeff, I'll give you a better reading. Let's say maybe in April or May.
But you want you think that it is, it's important. I mean, we know the presidential race. Who knows? But keep one of those two chambers just in case. It's got to be done just to keep these guys.
With Trump on the ticket, it certainly helps our chances, no doubt. Trump will bring voters out that normally don't even vote. So, again, I haven't given it much thought, but when you start talking about that, yeah, I mean, that gives you a few extra seats by having Trump on the ticket. You know, he's on the ticket for us on March the 5th. I certainly hope people turn out and vote for him on March the 5th. You know, show him that we love him in Alabama. Don't just sit back and say, well, we're Republican in Alabama. We don't have to worry about voting. Yes, you do. You better be heard. You better be heard, please.
Congressman, you're always very kind to come on this program, and we'll look forward to doing it again next week. Best of luck out there.
Thank you, Jeff. Anybody wants any more information, go to Jerry Carl for Congress.
Y'all check that out. Congressman Jerry Carl there. We got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. To the Jeff Porch Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking with us on this Wednesday morning. We are at the Alabama State House here in Montgomery. We've got a bunch of lawmakers coming up and Lieutenant Governor Will Ainsworth in that 11 o'clock hour. So stick around for that. A bunch of, during that interview with Congressman Carl, I have been sent from a number of people a tweet. From Alex Eisenstadt, he's a Politico reporter. The headline, Trump and Club for Growth have buried the hatchet. The two sides have been at each other's throats for over a year. But Trump dined with Club's David McIntosh on Wednesday and invited him on the plane today. So reportedly, there's not necessarily an anti-Trump. Well, maybe, I don't know, once you go anti-Trump, can you ever go back is the question. But how do you guys feel about Club for Growth back in Barry Moore? They're not doing it. And to be clear, they're coming in for Barry Moore without Barry Moore saying, hey, why don't you come in and support me? I mean, at least that's what they are telling me. So you could decide. But, I mean, I've talked to a lot of people about this stuff. I don't think it matters. I think maybe to 10% of you that listen to this program, you care. And you have long memories. You remember how they treated Congressman Byrne, which I will never understand. They also backed Tommy Tuberville against, well, against Bradley Byrne, against, you know, Jeff Sessions, and against Doug Jones. They backed Barry Moore in 2020 when he ran against Jeff Coleman, but they have a history of playing in Alabama politics. And Congressman Carl is right about this. They will, I think, inevitably wind up in this town involved. But there's a lot of people who are real nervous about that. And I just add this to that. They don't like the marketplace really being impacted by an outside Washington, D.C. based political organ. You know, like, hey, this is our sandbox. You stay away. And I don't know that I, you know, quite buy into the Club for Growth is the Devil narrative. Not yet, at least. Let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Now, if your leather jacket means to you what this hat means to me, then I...
From Buck's Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between, an insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way. No.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Hour number two now underway. Thank you so much for staying with us on this Wednesday morning. Text line, that's how you get in touch with the program, 251-343-0106. Still to come on the program, get you up to date here. State Representative Brian Brynjark, he's a new member from Tuscaloosa, took the Cal South seat. We'll hear from him. Danny Garrett, the House Education Trust Fund chairman, tentatively set to join us. If he is unable, we have a fill-in guest. But also, we'll wrap it up in the 11 o'clock hour. Lieutenant Governor Will Ainsworth. So jam-packed show from here on out. You want to make sure that you stick around for that. But joining us now, is it has been a while, Representative, but we've talked in the past. But you got a little pep in your step these days. But I'm pleased to introduce State Representative Steve Klaus to the program. Representative, good morning. How are you?
Thank you, Jeff. Glad to be here.
Hey, thanks for making time and coming on the show. So, well, how's it been? You know, you're no longer general fund chairman, but yeah, I mean that's a lot of weight off your shoulders, I assume. But what else you been up to?
Well, of course, no, I haven't been since this was second session where I have not been the chair of the general fund. I was chair 10 years previous to that, so it was a real heavy lift there, particularly during the times between, I would say, 14 and 17, 18, where we were fighting and scratching to find nickels and dimes underneath the couch to level fund a general fund budget that was, you know, $250 million in the hole. And so we came through all that and set up some good parameters there for the general fund budget by raising the amount of percentage that the general fund gets on the use tax versus going to the education budget. And then, of course, the big big lift was the SSUT, the Simplified Right. Sellers Use Tax, that when we set it up, we were never sure that we were able to be able to utilize or capture any of those funds unless either Congress got involved, which, of course, they never did, or unless the Supreme Court would take up a case and revisit it, which they did with South Dakota versus Wayfair. And that set everything in motion. And so we were fortunate, us and 13 other states sort of formed a consortium to be ready to go if that decision came through, and it did. And we hit the ground running and beat a lot of states to the punch. Now most states are capitalizing on those funds now.
Well, I mean, more broadly, Representative, I mean, you got to be proud of your work here. Coming out of 2010, Republicans take over, and the books have always been a mess. Proration, I mean, just every other year or so, and, you know, spending beyond the state's means, but it's not like the federal government. You can't just print money. And you guys get in, and it took you a few years, but you sort of got the financial health of the state in a good place. get that credit rating in a good place. I mean, that took a lot of discipline and a lot of hard conversations, I would have to think.
Well, it did. Before Republicans got the majority, we were going into proration, averaging one out of every 3 years, which is a terrible situation for local school boards because the only thing you can do is cut non-tenured teachers. You can't cut salaries. And so all you can do is cut non-tenured teachers, and that does away with some courses that are extracurricular. So right. You end up hurting the students there. But we end up putting that rolling reserve in. Very, very tough lift back in 2011. Fought tooth and nail by AEA on that because they wanted to spend everything that we had and, you know, just hope that the economy was able to keep going at a rapid rate, and that and the sales tax and income tax dollars would come in to meet those appropriations. And of course, that's fine during good economic times, but when the economy goes down like it did in 08 and 09, it puts you in a terrible situation. So the rolling reserve has been great. We haven't gone into proration on education budget since then, and then several years ago, myself and Clyde Chambliss in the Senate, we set up what we call, I like to call it, a mini rolling reserve in the general fund, which sets some criteria to put dollars away in the general fund. And we've got over $100 million in that fund right now. So and we haven't been in proration in the general fund either.
Well, and talk about this. One of the big things I remember, the way the prison situation has sort of gone, and you guys made a really great case, I thought, when during that special session a few years back, that you had this surplus, and you had this CARES Act, or what was the CARES Act? It was the one after that, money, ARPA money.
Right.
And you had this money, and then you were going to be able to go to market bond, and you weren't going to have to borrow as much money as maybe any other circumstances. But boy, the cost for the prisons just really went in place. No one had to see. Did y'all even think that was a possibility at the time?
Well, I don't think anybody realized, not only with prisons, but the cost of construction on anything, whether it be a home or a commercial building or whatever, would have skyrocketed like it did. So, we passed what we gave the finance department the ability to borrow up to $785 million, and they were only able to borrow $509 million when we went to market, and it wasn't because of the protesters protesting before the brokers that
just interest rates were
rates were up. It was not a good time there, and so we got $509 million from the bond market. We put another $155 million from surplus from the general fund in there, and then $400 million from the ARPA funds. So if we hadn't had that $400 million come from ARPA, we really would be in trouble right now.
Well, and I guess the question is this, and I know you're not general fund chairman anymore, but I mean, is it even plausible that, be it this administration or the next, have to come back to you guys for more money to build that second prison, the way things have escalated?
Well, we still have that authority there to that difference there between the 585 and the 509. To go back to the bond market and see if we could sell some more of those bonds, so we can raise approximately another $330 million. But you know, we will need that plus some additional money from the general fund, which we have that right now. Not the total amount, but we can chip away at it with, you know. We did $100 million last year on that budget, and we'll probably need to do another $100 million. I think we can get somewhere in the $600 million range. I don't know that we'll be able to build the type capacity prison that we had planned on building, but we've got to do that, and it's, you know, we've got the property there in Escambia County, and it's just it's got to do, we've got to do it because we got that a federal lawsuit that's coming up this year. That's been going on for 10 years now.
Do you think this is going to be kind of the trend in state government? Some of these big capital projects, I mean, highways and roads or rebuild, I mean, that just the reality, the way inflation's gone, there's going to be, and it's kind of going on in the consumer market with the shrinkflation, just not going to get the bang for your dollar what you had set aside in the past.
Well, it doesn't appear we're going to, unless we just, unless a big recession hits and right. something we don't want that causes prices to go down, you know.
Well, the other thing about it is, Representative, the marketplace and like labor, and it's more expensive, yes, and the materials, but it's just there's just not as much available on the market, right? Like getting a contractor to do something, and you just don't. I mean, you can't snap your fingers anymore because
along those lines, and this is coming from the ARPA funds, where we've got all this water and sewer work that's we have to have finished. We've appropriated the money from the ARPA funds, but it has to be finished by the end of 2026. That sounds like a long time off, but when you're competing with all the other states, particularly in Alabama, we're competing with Florida and Georgia, Mississippi and Tennessee for a limited amount of companies who have a limited amount of employees and a limited amount of supply, sewer products and water products. It's going to be a heavy lift, and of course that plays into all the other construction companies vying for these employees, you know.
Yeah, and so that's like one of these problems, I guess. I don't know how you prepare for it, but it's just the way it's played out. You hear that so much, and I guess the state's confronted with those same challenges.
Well, they are, and I don't think we're going to, you know, a lot of the money we spent on rural broadband, we will be able to spend that. The money that was allocated to the hospitals and nursing homes, they've already spent it. So, but the water and sewer products projects, I think there will be a lot of them that will not be completed. A lot of folks say that Washington will extend that timeline. I don't think they will. They realize, Democrats and Republicans alike, that they overshot the runway on that ARPA funding and the infrastructure bill, and they're going to try to claw back as much of that money as they can.
Yeah, because it was such a big number, and they just getting money out the door for the sake of COVID, and well, here we are. It's not COVID anymore, right?
That's right.
Now, well, it remains to be seen how that's going to play out. I do have just a few more minutes here with you. How are things going back at home in your district?
Well, everything's fine right now. You know, Bub, the economy's good in the Wiregrass. You know, we're anchored by Fort Novosel, and of course, big and still in the farming business. Been down in Dothan. It's become such a healthcare center there for not only South Alabama but for Northwest Florida and over into Southwest Georgia. So it's a big medical industry there.
This new congressional district, kind of a disruption. I mean, what?
No, I think so. It's very, very confusing for the people in the Wiregrass in particular, because there's so many candidates running in district, district one, not that many candidates, but in district two there are. And of course, our media market, the NBC stations, WSFA, which carries all the
Montgomery
the district two candidates. And then on the CBS and ABC affiliate, they're carrying the district one candidates. So it's really confusing. People don't know, in the counties down there, which district they're in.
Well, we got the same problem. I mean, one and two, and
that's right.
And Florida, I guess a little bit of Florida, for some of those stations as well.
But yeah, probably over in Covington County, it probably is.
You don't have but you don't really have a contested congressional race in either one or two in Florida. So you're stayed all from that. But other than that, the economy's going good. It's just it seems like you talk about the Wiregrass these days. I mean, it does seem like it's got a little more energy surrounding it, you know, than maybe than we used to talk about it in the past, but. It's just a matter of me being exposed to it, but the helicopters and the fort there, that's got to be like a big part of it.
It is, and the city of Dothan, it's become a really sort of a little hotbed. I mean, it's not like Madison County or Baldwin County, but it's really had a lot of growth in Houston County in the last
the mayor Doth had told me this, and this may be one of these that time we did it at the show at Troy State there. But he said like it becomes like the population of the city like triples during work hours because everybody comes to Dothan.
That's right. There's a lot of bedroom communities around Dothan. You know, several of the towns in Dale County where I live are a lot of our folks work in Dothan and live in the surrounding communities. And,
well, that's good to hear. Representative, you've been very generous with your time. You've always been good to this program. I always appreciate you. You're a good man. And best of luck to you. Hopefully we can talk to you again soon.
All right. Thanks a lot, Jeff.
All right. That was State Representative Steve Klaus here on the program. Let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show at FM Talk 106.5.
You turn the other cheek. I hope you're old enough to understand. Son, you don't have to fight to be a man. There's someone for everyone.
The radio show voted most likely to draw a targeting penalty.
Right now, you officially qualify, I can't believe I'm saying, as one of the dumbest callers we've ever had.
You're a lying piece of crap. You are a loser.
The Paul Feinbaum Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Spend my dollar parking hard underneath the mountain moonlight.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Wednesday morning. State Representative Brian Brignard joining us in the next segment. So hang out for that. We'll talk Tuscaloosa. I don't have many Tuscaloosa lawmakers on this program, but we're looking forward to that in just a moment. No, I will not bring up Taco Casa, if you're wondering. But anyway, I tell you guys, this Club for Growth, Jerry Carl Barry Moore situation, it's kind of interesting. More on that in a moment. Unnamed texter, nobody really believes Barry Moore doesn't want Club for Growth support. He desperately needs it to level the money. He spoke out against it early. It was politically expedient, as the old part of AL1 hates them. If you read my other text, I was defending more, but I'm back on the Jerry train for several reasons. So it does make a difference, apparently, to some people. So what else we got here? Jeff, I like. Let's see. Oh, here we go. Jeff, one thing, first of dealing we had, Jerry was a county commissioner at one of their meetings. She was upset with the money County Hudson was spending on her public facility. He went on a rant after he said what he thought was a good reason not to spend money for the facility. He quickly put his completely back in his place by the speaker, was a representative for the group, representative of the facilities. I'm not familiar with that situation. Real quick, Michael, if Carl's voice goes out, maybe it will help his poll number some, since you won't be able to be slinging mud. What does Carl think of term limits? Sorry, I didn't get an opportunity to ask that question. Sam, Jeff, and Jerry, howdy. I'm a 69-year-old male taxpayer who never got asked for anything from the government. The text line a little clunky this morning. Just got out of the hospital, received $4,000 bill. I just don't feel right about paying it with these people who walk across the border, get it for free. I feel your pain, man. I absolutely hear you. It's a weird time to be involved in this racket. Rock and roll doctor. Australia, Austal and Australia Company builds a piece of junk if you believe the Navy's reporting on water trials of the LCS. A couple more to get to here. Terry says, Jerry Call has over 100 donors for Beltway, including Meta and Google, not pro-Trump groups. And then finally, Lokis will destroy that guy, Steve Klaus, from an unnamed texter. Steve Klaus, he was general fund chairman. What did him in, and I didn't really hit on this, but he ran for speaker against Ledbetter, and what came out of that, I mean, Ledbetter said, hey, to the victor goes the spoils, and They put Rex Reynolds, another friend of the program, by the way, in that spot as general fund chairman. So, we you know, it's just the way it goes, but he's been kind of a reliable guy, fiscally conservative. Like I said, really remarkable what they did with the state budgets. You got to remember, under Democrat rule, it was much, much different. I mean, they would just spend recklessly, and, you know, if you ran out of money before the fiscal year was over, then so be it. You just had to figure things out. I mean, I grew up going to Alabama public schools. I remember those proration days and cutting down on the school. Yeah, my next guest agreeing with me here, but I mean, it was like pretty regular. You just assumed that that's just how things were, you know. But Republican leadership has really changed that, and you don't have an all-powerful, now they're coming back, but the all-powerful teachers union kind of calling the shots there, and the AEA, it's a different culture than it's ever been, and this probably goes back the last 10 years or so. Anyway, 251-343-0106, text us, you want to get in. I got some time throughout the program, and we'll try to get to respond to your text. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show at FM Talk 106.5. Sure you knew when I bit off.